Welcome to Season 1, Episode 5 of Interior Creature in Communion. I'm Jacqueline Michelle, and I am so honored you're here, and I cannot wait for you to hear this conversation. Each week, I sit in communion with a member of the Interior Creature community to talk about the work of deconditioning, of exploring every little nook and cranny of our birth charts, and the process of moving from intellectual epiphanies to actual embodiment of the highest, most compassionate frequencies of the energies within our chart. Another thing to note, everyone whom I sit with in communion is given a pseudonym just to protect their privacy and to create a safe container that allows for vulnerability and honesty. Today, I want to share my conversation with Rose, a 1-3 manifester with ego manifested authority and the writing across of the Maya in Gate 42. Over the course of our conversation, Rose and I talk about the highly charged term ego, about navigating the world with so many open centers, and we bust some pop human design myths about manifestors. We're going to drop into the conversation right after I thank Rose for sitting down with me and ask her about her human design experiment thus far.
Human design landed for me because I was getting into astrology. It was 2019. And what is human design? You know, I want to learn all the things. And I read about being an ego manifester, and a lot of it, well, the manifester part of it made so much sense to me. And then you have the ego, the word ego in there. And at the time,
that can be a tripwire, right?
Yeah. At the time, it was like, what does this mean? And I left it for about a year, and then touch back a year later, I met someone who was really into it, and I got a reading from her. And ever since then, I've been, you know, I'll dive in moments at a time. And it hasn't been until I'd say this last year where I've intuitively have followed mine as a map, like, I'm really drawn to this aspect right now. Let's dive into that. I'm in New Zealand right now. And this for me is like my full dive into experimentation, because as we know, the one line can just like research and have, I have ideas, but I need to jump into it. And that three experimenter was a little bit of a challenge for me at first too.
I can see that. Yeah. Because the one is very, you and I with the open head, open mind, and a one, we want to dive into all the things super deep at a time. But the third line gives us that permission to kind of like dip a toe in, see what works, see what doesn't, kind of experiment and play a little bit. And I would imagine that as a manifester, it's funny, I think our conditioning probably loves the first line a little bit more because it feels safer. Uh-huh. But I wonder if your design, and ironically, I mean, it is your design, that's the design line in your profile, probably really appreciates the freedom and flexibility of the third line as a manifester.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one of the things that that Rose kind of mentioned to me when she wrote in was this idea of like, first of all, ego manifested, heart manifested, like, what does that mean? How do we even feel it in our body? So tell me a little bit about just like your, how you experience, and you can call it ego manifested, heart manifested. We're like tomato, tomato over here. It's they're one and the same. How does that feel in your body? Have you had a hard time feeling it, or is it something that you feel like, oh no, I know exactly what that feels like in my body? Like, talk to me a little bit about like the bodily connection, I guess, to your authority.
I'd say more recently I can feel it, but it's only when I feel safe, like the people that I'm with, because the way that I express, I can see it now as, you know, little Rose and my inner child. I can see when she was expressive, and how it looks like now is like, it's really big and it's really bold. And it's really like, I'm afraid to love people so much, because when I love you, it feels like I'm obsessed, but there's healing around that idea that I've done where I'm like, I can really just express this. And the people in my circle and who are near and dear to me, they really are able to receive all of that. But when I'm meeting someone for the first time and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I love you. I love you so much. And I want to know everything about you. I can see how that's a lot, but I feel so like a passion just coming out of me. And earlier when you said, I talk with my hands, I'm like, I do too. I've heard before that like your hands are an extension of your heart. And that makes a lot of sense for me, because I'm also, I do energy and sound healing. And the expression and I can feel the energies flow out of my hands. So having that be an extension of my heart is so, it feels really big. And I can feel it right now. I have chills.
What I love about the way your chart's oriented, given that the sound healing, the energy work you do, is your completely open cradle. It can be really tricky to walk through the world with open spleen, open sacral, open solar plexus, and open root. Like it can kind of feel a little bit like you're this big raw nerve and you're feeling everybody's stuff at once. But at the same time, if you're doing energy work, if you're doing like sound healing, that is an asset, like to get a sense of like who is having a hard time relaxing into the sound bath, or who maybe has something that needs to be pulled out of them or cleansed or cleared, if there's a blockage or something. Like that really helps you tap in that way. But what's hard is a lot of us aren't taught, especially as children, how to like be a sieve and not a sponge. Like we kind of like aren't, we're great at like sponging up other people's stuff, but we forget it's not ours. Like no one, at least me, no one ever taught me, just because you feel it doesn't mean it's yours. That's something that came to me much later in life. And now like trying to kind of go, okay, I don't have to carry this around. I can put it back down. That doesn't necessarily belong to me. Like that's a whole new skill set to try to learn. And especially in what you do, the having that kind of energetic clearing for yourself can be really important. But I want to zoom in on something you said that I thought was really interesting. A, you talked about safety, how when you feel your heart, it feels much better when you feel safe. Like it's clearer to you when you feel safe. And I'm wondering if that has to do, like an interesting thing for you to dig into might be your connection to your open spleen. Folks with an open spleen center typically are really good at sensing other people's discomfort, overwhelm, anxiety, nervousness, stress. And sometimes when we're in the shadow of the open spleen, it's almost like we only feel safe when we're around other people who either have that thing closed or close it for us in our chart. Because then it's like, oh, now I feel like my street sense are back. Like I have a sense of like what's safe and what is, and I feel a little bit better in my body. That would be an interesting thing to kind of dig into, especially, pardon me, because you've got the channel of awakening, but you don't have that gate 57, like connecting it to this, because that would define your spleen. That might be an interesting thing to kind of like think about, experiment with, play with, like maybe the connection between safety and like what you need to feel safe in a specific way, and like how safety manifests in your body if it's not going to manifest through your spleen center.
That really resonates for me, because part of this solo journey is, it's been fun and scary, but my practice in like getting into the body and somatics is all a part of this, all a part of this, because that fear gets so debilitating. I just need to go back in my shell.
I get that. It's funny. I have just my solar plexus of the four that you have open. I have just my solar plexus open. And I get that way with people's emotions. Cause it's like, not only am I sponging them up sometimes, but it's like, they're dialed all the way up to like 11. Like it's not, you're like a spinal tap. Like it's not, it's left the, you know, range of normal volume and now it's too loud. Like it's, I don't know how to turn it down sometimes. And that's something that like, we're supposed to kind of through breath work, meditation, like all those different tools available to us, like figure out a way to A, depersonalize the sensation and kind of try to witness it and not judge it, not try to micromanage it, but just like, okay, it's something I'm experiencing. It's not necessarily for me, from me. How do I release it lovingly? How do I thank it for sharing with me its information, but maybe not take it and cling to it and like walk around with it because it's not necessarily mine. That takes practice, that takes, you know, a lot. And I think traveling solo, traveling in a way that, you know, you're in a new place, you're in a completely different time zone and a completely different continent. Like that's a great way to start, you know, really, because you're out of familiar energy, getting a really clear sense of like, okay, this is what my body feels like when it's sponging, mirroring, magnifying. This is feels like when my body's actually talking to me.
Yeah. This was my experience last night, because I was with friends who picked me up, and I was with them for a couple of days. And when I finally got to my Airbnb last night and I was completely by myself, I knew what energy was mine and what wasn't. The practice is like knowing in the moment when I am with people, you know, when I'm with myself, it feels so good and I feel so clear, but I have to be completely alone. Oh, I was like, that's the tricky part. We aren't always alone. So how do I navigate that in life without completely secluding myself and living on an island?
I get that. Like I have that. My friends always tease me. They're like, you basically are like a little monk living in a, you know, like your little cave in the middle of the woods or something. I'm here by myself with my three dogs. And I love it. But I hear you on that, because one of the things I think that's helped me, at least in my journey, is figuring out my home frequency, like what it feels like when I am alone, when I am in my own energy, when I'm not taking in anything of anybody else's. And I'm and it's interesting because like when this system was channeled, you and I were wee little children, like, and the world was a very different place. Like, you know, we couldn't pick up our cell phone and be connected to the entire rest of the world on the internet. Like we didn't have, you know, TikTok and Instagram and all these like these apps that were like were literally it's a one-sided exchange of energy. Like, you know, we turn on that person's TikTok and now we're in their energy field. And so podcasts, even like TV, all of that is vibrational frequency. All of that is energy. And it's interesting. There's this Buddhist teacher that talks about one of the teachings that the Buddhists apparently talked a lot about was like your energetic diet, as well as like your physical diet and how important that is. I think for us, especially because you and I are one thing we have in common is we only have three centers closed and the rest of our charts are open. We're very susceptible to other people's energies. And so understanding what we feel like when we're in a good kind of home frequency is critical, because then when we start going out with other people, we start recognizing immediately what shifted and what changed. Yeah. We start noticing when we're sponging, where we're mirroring, where we're magnifying. But it almost starts with like knowing the centers we do have closed and how they speak to us first and getting like really, really clear about that. I want to come back to the love thing you talked about earlier, because I have a theory about that. But let's talk about your heart center, because we're right here. So one of the things you and I were talking about kind of off air before we started recording was this idea of just like the heart center being a really tough one to kind of pin down because of our conditioning. So one of the things that literally thousands of my clients over the years have shared with me when they do have a closed heart center is when I'm describing to them like what the open heart center feels like versus what the closed heart center feels like, a lot of them identify with the characteristics of the open heart, even though their heart is closed in their body.
Same for me.
And a lot of times I kind of think about that under the idea of just, you know, capitalism and gender-based conditioning. From the time that we're little, we are taught that our value is what we contribute and that, you know, we need to work harder. And like, you know, even in the States, like this illusion of meritocracy, which is not actually really a thing, like, you know, we're taught hard work, grit, tenacity, et cetera. You got to commit, you got to follow through. And a lot, I know, right? A lot of that conditioning puts us in a position to, like, from the time we're little, to ignore any messages the heart center would send you, because your heart's kind of managing two things. It's managing what can I commit to and what do I actually want? So from the what can I commit to part, it's almost like an energetic commitment. Like in your chart, it's your only energy center. So your heart's basically going, do I have the bandwidth to follow this thing through? Yes or no? And it's hard to feel that if from the time you were little, you've gotten a message, like, it doesn't matter what you can take on or not, you've got to follow through. So it's this like constant, like, got to suppress it, got to suppress it, got to push through.
Yes. And so people pleasing, you know, the wounds of people pleasing. And I'm curious about how, and I've been kind of playing with this, how that correlates with gate 42 completing things. So if I commit and I keep breaking the commitment and I have to come back to it again. And so I'm coming into this space with experimentation where, okay, we have to slow down. And that's the only way that I can really hear what the heart is wanting. And I have to be really brave in also asking for it and having hard conversations. And that leads me to fear.
It's funny. You and I, that's another thing we have in common in our chart. Gate 42 is a super rare one to have activated. And again, I don't have like a statistic. I always joke, I don't have like a statistically representative sample, but just of the clients that I've read for, it's one I don't see very often. And I think I'm hyper aware of it because I have it in my chart as well. 42, you're absolutely right. It's in the sacral center. It's called the gate of growth for listeners who are kind of, you know, going 42. I don't know where that is. So it's a gate in the sacral center. It's called the gate of growth. And it does kind of signal to us when it's time to like close the door, end a chapter, cut a cord, like to say like, this is no longer serving me, or this is, I've kind of reached my breaking point, or, you know, ooh, this is just the end of a cycle before I start a new one. And when it's in a full channel, it's a channel called the channel of maturation. And it pairs with gate 53, which is this like kind of anchoredness and pressure to kind of start something new and like launch a new chapter, right? So it's beautiful when they're both together, because you end up with someone who has the tenacity and the balance to understand like, here's when we start, like, and here's where we end. here's when we plant the seeds and here's where we harvest. And it's like a very clear, like cyclical thing. You and I just having gate 42. It's like, I just get a feeling sometimes it's time to end something. And in your chart, it's a little harder. And it's actually probably a theme right now because of your sacral and your root being defined by the Pluto transit. So this is another thing that's going on in your chart. So you have gate three natally. Gate three is literally right next door to gate 42. It's all about how we navigate change. It's called the gate of ordering. And when it hangs out with gate 60, it makes something called the channel of mutation. Gate 60, Pluto has been sitting in gate 60 for the past year. It's going to be in gate 60 for the rest of this year. And it's in the aneretic degree of gate 60 right now, which means it's like literally right on that 29th degree about to transit into Aquarius. And then it's going to move back into Capricorn. And then it's going to move back to Aquarius a little bit. So we're on that kind of cusp of Pluto moving in permanently into the kind of upper levels of gate 60, the upper lines of gate 60 before it then moves into the next gate on the gate in Aquarius. So right now, Pluto is closing your root center and closing your sacral because it's giving you that channel of mutation. So with that closed sacral, you're probably experiencing the themes of gate 42 a lot more consistently, a lot more loudly because of that temporal sacral definition, or temporary rather, sacral definition. So one of the things we were talking about before we started recording as well was what I call like pop human design. There's a lot of really weird information out there that I almost think is like way too simplified about how manifestors roll and what you're supposed to do and like traits you have or don't have. And I know one of the pieces of bad advice, you can go ahead and share it. What was the thing that you kind of shared with me before we started that you heard about manifestors?
They're starters, but they don't finish things. And I'm looking at my chart like, okay, I see how that has happened in my life. But then I'm looking at gate 42. And it's saying you got to complete the cycle, or you got to complete it. And a lot of language in manifestors is you don't complete things. Like literally you don't complete. I'm like, what?
I almost wonder if it has to do with conditioning, because so many manifestors get conditioned to, again, suppress your kind of informing and your excitement. So manifestors are unique in that you're the only type in human design that does not have the word wait in your strategy. So what ends up happening is you get an idea, an impulse, an inkling, and your body kind of has to start moving toward it to figure out if it's for you or not. And even though you have ego manifested authority, you also have your self center closed. So what's really cool is you have two centers that are literally trying to tell you this is for me or this isn't at any given time. And so you have kind of almost like three dual messages kind of happening. A, the heart center is either like leaning forward toward the thing, using proximity to kind of signal to you, ooh, I want this. Ooh, I can commit to this thing. Or it's leaning you back physically and saying like, ooh, I don't want this. I can't commit to this thing. Like, this isn't for me. Then we've got the self center additionally through the chest, like expanding and going, oh my God, this feels like me. Or contracting and going, oh, it actually doesn't, never mind. Like, it's kind of like literally visceral. And it's funny because it's completely subconscious or unconscious. Like, it's like the body is either moving forward or backward or expanding or contracting to kind of indicate to you whether it's for you or not. But you can't know it unless you actually start stepping into it. So one of the things that I wish they would add to your strategy beyond just informing is the micro steps and the continuous checking in with yourself. Because as you start taking steps toward the thing, your body also speaks to you using the language of anger and peace. And if you start moving towards something and it's not as you thought it was going to be, or it's not going as smoothly as you hoped, it's going to piss you off. And so the anger plus the contraction in the chest, or like the leaning back in the body, that's your body's way of saying, you know, better in theory than in practice, you know, pivot. And I don't see a pivot as not finishing. It's you readjusting real time to go, I shouldn't commit any further, or I've committed to the amount I meant to. Let me take a step back from this. But I think it's that conditioning that, like, so many manifestors, especially here in the States, like, our culture is very much a culture of permission for children. Like, we don't teach them to say, you know, oh, I'm going over to Johnny's after school. It's, can I go over to Johnny's after school? And so a lot of times you, from a young age, I bet, were kind of conditioned to be someone who asks permission, who requests, as opposed to gets to like rehearse or try out what feels good and what doesn't. And so giving yourself that permission slip as an adult, like, that's inner child healing for little Rose to say, like, I need to let her know it's okay to tell me what she wants, tell me what she desires. And then we'll stick our toe in. We'll see how it feels as we're going. And I think the commitment part too, we kind of almost need to, like, I guess, revise our definition a little bit of like what completion means and what it doesn't. Because gate 42 is more about, I see it as like letting your body, letting you know when it's time to close a chapter. And that might mean that you close that chapter a lot earlier than other people would close it. That might mean that you, you know, I always think about in the context of relationships. Like if you're, you know, you say you were in a long-term partnership, you might reach the point where you're not growing together anymore. It's acrimonious. It's no longer healthy. Just because you didn't get to the marriage and the baby stage doesn't mean you failed or you didn't follow it through. You came to the end of that chapter and it was time to close it and step into something else. Same with a job. Like you might start somewhere and thinking, oh, I'm going to climb the ladder and end up in, you know, this position later. And then you're like, actually, I learned what I need to learn. I'm going to go to a different industry, or I'm going to go to a different, you know, company or whatever it is. Like you get to decide that for yourself. It's just the sacral trying to let you know, this is a door we need to close. And I see your incarnation cross, because especially because it's the cross of the Maya, really about honoring that ending for you, knowing when a chapter has come to close and like deciding like, this is where I get off the train. This is where I exit stage left. Like, because I've learned what I need to learn, and like almost extracting that from what society says your endpoints are.
Are you a small business owner or a spiritual practitioner working in the wellness space? Do you want to get your offerings in the ear holes of the amazing members of the Interior Creature community? If so, you are in luck, because I'm looking for sponsors for upcoming episodes. Drop me an email at interiorcreature@gmail.com, and Interior Creature is all one word, and let's chat and see if you're a good fit. Now, back to the pod.
Yeah, that feels huge. And even as you were saying, how is my body reacting to this? And that forward and back movement that you were doing, I'd be curious to start experimenting with noticing what my body is doing in situations, because it is unconscious, but that awareness, I'm very curious about it now.
Next time you go out to dinner, watch yourself with the menu. I have a friend who has her heart defined. And when she likes something, she's literally like, her nose is to that menu, and you could just see her body. Like, you know, she sits up a little straighter because she also has her sacral defined. And then as there's something she doesn't like, she is like as far from that menu as possible. It is the funniest thing. And then her voice gets really loud. What's lacho and wasabi in the same omelet? Like she has big opinions, but it's just so funny. She doesn't realize she does it. And it was just so funny, because I remember years ago when I was first learning about human design and I read that somewhere, I realized she had that in her chart, and we went out to dinner, and I'm like, oh my God, it's real. Like I was watching her do it in real time. It's something she didn't even realize she was doing. So that's going to kind of think about too, like noticing distance and proximity. And I think also like noticing, this is the other part of it too. What do you want and what you don't? I think as women, especially, we are taught, whether overtly or, you know, kind of through just like osmosis in the general culture, that our desires are not important, yet they are. And so that's another people pleasing thing, you know, as women, a lot of times we're taught to, you know, subvert, I guess, like not subvert, suppress, like repress, deny the things that we actually want in order to be accepted, in order to kind of gain, you know, the right partner or the right job or the right whatever. Your entire purpose on the planet is to figure out what you want and make it manifest. Like that is what the manifestor is here to do.
Everything we weren't taught to be.
I know, but I think that that's beautiful, especially like given like your variables, like three of your four arrows are facing right. Like you're ready for the age of Aquarius. You're ready for like the new thing we're building. You just got this one little arrow facing left going, I have to just hang in there until we cross that threshold. I got to be able to navigate the systems and structures as they are. But man, is my soul over here. Like in this kind of paradigm. And it's not selfish to do that. It's self-full. Mm-hmm. It's this idea that like we can actually serve our communities better if we're not doing it from a place of exhaustion, resentment, obligation. If it comes from a place of joy, a true place of service, a place of excitement, like that's when you're going to be able to be like actually the most magnetic, powerful version of yourself. And so you're kind of here to show us how to do that, like how to go, you know, my cup is full, and because it's so full and it's actually falling over the brim, I have so much to share with other people. And so, it's figuring out what that is that like does that for you. And that channel of money, I think, is going to help you do that. Because I know that was another thing we were talking about just prior to going on air. Tell me about your understanding of the channel of money so far. Just like when maybe some of the things you've heard, read, et cetera. Like what's been your kind of general vibe on that?
The general vibe is that you know how to make money very, very easily, and like you just get money and how it works.
Yeah, I've read that too.
Okay. There was something I think in 45 about rulership and leading, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right. No, it's okay. It wasn't a pop quiz. That's perfect. That's
That's
totally perfect. It's funny because 45 and 12 or 21 rather that make the channel of money. You're right. Like there's a lot of places that just see the word money and go, oh, you must be financially savvy. You must be really good at stewarding other people's money. And maybe not. I see it as more nuanced than that. So gate 45, it's called the gate of the gatherer. And typically people have this gate of the gatherer, they end up getting appointed into leadership positions. And what's challenging about that is it's not like gate 31, which is the other leadership gate. 31 gets elected into a leadership position. So you know when you're elected, you have the will of the people to legislate, to guide, to lead, whatever that thing is. But whereas with gate 45, when you're appointed, it's like, oh, how am I going to get everybody on my team? Like, how am I going to make sure we all get from point A to point B? They call it like the queen leading through education. And some of the best explanations I've read about this, especially in the I Ching, are all about this co-education that has to kind of take place. You have to kind of gather the people to you and say, I want to introduce you to Rose. Here's who I am. Here's what I value. Here's what's important to me. I want to get to know you now, Peony, Poppy, Chrysanthemum. Like, I want to know all of you. We're just going flower names today. Like, I want to know you. I want to know what your values are. I want to know what your goals are at this company, or I want to know like what you need in a friend, or what you need in a colleague, or whatever it is. You're gathering the people to you. You're doing this co-education, and then when you have to lead them, it's always from a place of like, here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing it. Are you on board? What else do you need to feel comfortable? So it's like this kind of like balance. And then 21 on the other side, the gate of the hunter or huntress or huntrix, whatever it is all about control, knowing how much control we're supposed to kind of take on in any sort of situation. I always use the analogy of like the gate of the huntress is all about like figuring out what seat you need to sit in the car to be the best of like the most of service. Like if you were coming to visit me in Tucson, it might not make sense for you to drive. Like you might be a better driver than I am, but I'm from here. And like I know the roads, I know where we're going. It kind of makes the most sense. And even if we were going somewhere new, like maybe you've never driven my car before, it makes more sense for you to be the navigator. Or you're maybe with a time change, I might be like, girl, you could best serve us by sleeping in the back of the car. Like go sleep in the back seat, put in your headphones, here's a pillow, go take a nap. Like it's kind of trying to figure out like what's the best, what is my way of serving right now? Like, and how much control do I need to exert? And I talk about like the divine kind of essence of this, of being like this, like being the ultimate authority in yourself to know how can I best be of service and kind of taking the ego with, the Freudian ego, or like I guess like the pop culture's version of ego out of it. Like it's not about me being in charge, it's about how are we going to get the thing served. So the way I have the best explanations I've read of this channel of money are this ability you have to navigate some sort of like material plane system structure. It's almost like you understand how to get people from point A to point B. And so it's like if you're able to balance that leadership, those two kind of leadership things of like, here's how much control I need to take, or here's where I need to empower other people, here's where I lead, here's where I guide, here's where I coach from the side. And like, how am I going to help everyone make sure we're all on the same page of what are we doing? Why are we doing it? What's the plan? What's the pathway? If I can do that really well, then I can make a shit ton of money. Like, because those are like really lucrative positions. Like, I almost think of a lawyer saying, okay, if you want to incorporate your business, like I have this like area of expertise, I've got this knowledge, I have the authority to tell you what steps you need to take, but I can't hold your hand and file the thing for you. Like, here's what you can fill out, here's how I can help you. Here's how I'm going to like, coach you along the way. Let's make sure our goals are the same. Let's make sure we're on the same page about what you want out of this, et cetera. It's almost like you can guide them through a specific system in a specific way. And because you kind of are an expertise, you have expertise at doing that kind of dance of leading and guiding and coaching and supporting, like that's the thing that makes it like magnetic to people wanting to send energy in the form of money your way.
Your explanation should be written down of what that channel is,
I will
because
transcribe
yes,
it.
please do. Because even when you explain how you've read it, I'm like, no, it's not as powerful as the way that you really just spoke about it there and then.
Thank you.
And I was watching my life in all the parts and ways that you explain that. I was kind of like dancing with you as you were saying it. Holy boop.
can curse here. We're not too spiritual. Okay. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That was so fucking good.
It makes so much more sense than like, oh, you're naturally good at money. I've met people with this channel who are like carpenters and are really good at like telling a homeowner, hey, I know you want to put an addition over here, but I feel like the ground's not level enough or whatever it is. It's like there's some sort of expertise that can be lucrative in that way if you've balanced those two skills and you've learned those two lessons. So, yeah.
And I feel like I've shared this with people in my life before where I see myself as this, what I imagine producers do on a set. They gather all the people and they know what this person needs to do and that person needs to do. And that's their job, like the whole, getting the whole production moving like a well-oiled machine. And that's my dream because I've been in a lot of, you know, different jobs and companies and working with all different types of people. And there's a point in time in those jobs where I can see all of the moving parts. And I'm like, if we can just do it like this, I know it'll work. And there's only been maybe one or two opportunities in jobs that I've been in where I fully got rein of that. And I cleaned up the whole way it was done. And my manager, who didn't know who I was, didn't trust me, just like let me do whatever I wanted because it would get done.
Yeah.
But now I'm in the space of, well, I want to build my own business and I want, you know, I don't want to do this for other people. And it's a little tricky, but I think I'm at the very beginnings of that where I'm learning about people and slowly they're gathering and I'm meeting them. And yeah, I my whole body, the whole time you explained that was just like having filled with chills.
You know, it's totally on board with your incarnation cross too. Like as you were talking, I'm thinking about the cross of the Maya. The way I always remember what that cross is about is what happened to this culture? Why is it still not thriving? And I know with the Mayans, like a lot of times we see the ruins, the pyramids, et cetera. And people are always asking like, you know, the big question, I guess, is like, well, what happened to this civilization? Why did they abandon this place? What happened? What changed? And people with the cross of the Maya, it's like your finger is on the pulse of change. Like you understand how the situation has evolved, what has transpired, what might be happening moving forward because of all the stuff that's happened in the past. Like you have such this, like, it's almost like you've got the eagle eye view and you understand. It's so funny because you and I as 1-3s, we don't technically go up on the roof the way that 6s do. But your incarnation cross is very much a I'm on the roof kind of vibe where you're like, okay, I see
that. It makes so much sense for me.
Like you see it from all these different perspectives. And that's the thing that helps you with your channel of money is like, I see what didn't happen that needed to happen. I see the thing that was missed. Like we forgot to cross this T, this I wasn't dotted. That's why this challenge happened. Hey, let's go back and clean it up. Let's try to make it so, because some of the other gates you have activated, like gate 58 wants to leave whatever situation it walks into better than you found it. And gate 32 is so aware of like what can change and what can't. And then 42 wants to close out cycles. Like all of, it's an entire story working together. Like that consulting, that project management, that, you know, really that it's almost like being a, I don't know, like a guide. Or I always think about the Sherpa people that like help, you know, all the climbers up and down Everest are like, don't put your shoe there. That's a chasm. Don't go over there. Like they know the terrain so well that like they can almost anticipate what's going to go wrong, what's going to go right, just by looking at the weather forecast. Like you have that ability to be super knowledgeable on something and do that for other people. But it's got to be something you feel like, I want this, I can commit to it, and it feels like me. And if it meets those two criteria, and you're feeling peace and ease and just like flow and autonomy, like those are the things your body is looking for.
Oof. Yeah. I think I'm just starting that. And this is very validating to my experience.
You're on the right path. You've got all the right ingredients. It's funny with human design. I feel like so much of it is intuitive without us even realizing it. Like,
yeah,
it's just, it's all there. It's just a matter of what am I doing with those ingredients? Last thing I wanted to tell you, because you mentioned earlier about like being such a love bug and people feeling really like drawn to you in that way. That's your gate 59. Mm-hmm. I love people with gate 59. You and I are actually making the channel of mating right now. It's not just about sex. Like gate 59.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I was gonna say, people get so reductive, just like the channel of money. People see gate 59. They're like, oh, she likes to have sex with 59. 59 is about any deep intimacy we're building with people. The analogy I always use is gate 59. When you meet someone, think of like all your relationships like a dartboard. Okay. You're trying to figure out who are my inner circle people. I know every inch of them. They know every inch of me. We are ride or die, totally like intertwined. Like we've got amazing deep connections and I can trust them. They're rock solid, but not everybody fits in that little bullseye, right? That's why if you ever seen drunk people try to play darts, like it's a dangerous game because like that's a very small target. The darts.
Why is that a thing?
Oh, it's just like the axe throwing at bars. I'm like, you know, as someone who's sober too, I'm like, don't ever put it. When I was drunk, you should have never put an axe in my hand. Like that would have been a recipe for disaster. But yeah, so those dartboards, like part of what you're trying to do with that, like that magnetic energy. First of all, a lot of times if people have gate 6 in their chart, you feel that magnetism toward them. Like even when you and I started talking initially, before I even noticed you at gate 59, I was like, oh my God, I really like her. And then I was like, oh, that's our GS 59. We're making an electromagnetic channel. But there's also people who just feel very drawn to you. And you're trying to figure out like, where does this person go on my dartboard? Are they in the inner circle? Are they in one of the little inner rings? Or are they out here on the periphery? Or maybe they need to be on the wall in the corner because the dart went awry and they're not even on the dartboard. Like how is that? So that's part of where that's coming from too, is 59 is kind of like scanning and going like, do I have the energy to like, does this person light me enough up enough? Like, am I turned on enough metaphorically or physically to like really want to go deep and intimate with this person? And it can be platonic, it can be romantic, it can be, you know, professional. Like we have all, you know, you probably met people professionally where you're like, I want to nerd out and work with you. And you feel that pull.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times it's that kind of gate 59. So that's kind of where that's coming from as well. But yeah, it's just so interesting. I think like you always want to draw though back to your home frequency of yourself and your heart by going, okay, do I identify with this person? Is this someone I'd be proud to be associated with? Like, could I envision saying, hey, this is my friend, and like introducing them as like someone you're connected to? And does your heart feel like you can commit to, you know, following through on plans or, you know, partnerships or whatever it is? Do you feel that desire, that commitment, that energy, that bandwidth, or are you feeling yourself pull away and contract? Like, I think that will, because 59 is just trying to figure it out. And so that's probably why you get the, oh my God, I love you immediately. Like, then as you find out more things, just make sure you're always letting yourself and your heart kind of drive the car.
Oh, yeah. I love the dartboard analogy because I think there's moments where I think that it has to be for everyone, like the love, and it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't.
Like, I love that question. Like, does this turn me on? Like this relationship, this partnership, and I'm not speaking in a sexual way, but light me up. Am I alive for this? That's that's a big question that I allow to lead me.
Our culture fetishizes length in relationships and like loyalty. I always found it so funny when people are like, oh my God, we've been friends since diapers. But then I watch the two of them and I'm like, your relationship is very unhealthy. Like you do not like each other anymore. You are not compatible.
Why are we still doing this, guys? Exactly.
And so that's, I think that I almost wish we would get better at like that conscious uncoupling. I'm always going to steal Gwyneth Paltrow's term, but like that idea that like the length of something doesn't make it more valuable. It's what is the depth of connection? How healthy is that connection? Is it serving us? Is it balanced? Is it equitable? Does it like, again, turn us on, light us up in that way where it's like, I can't wait till I get to see this person? Or is it something we're like enduring or like pushing through? And it's like, or we're just stuck. And again, that's that people pleasing we were talking about earlier. That's that almost codependency that's like, well, I've always been this person's friend, ergo, you know, and maybe that's not the hell. Yeah. And again, it's harder for us because you and I will feel in our sacral, oh, it's time to close this chapter. But I don't know if you're like me. I have gate 12, the gate of caution. I am the least confrontational person on the planet. I will look for the, I will like kind of French exit and just kind of like ghost out into the distance and hope they don't notice it. Yeah. Or, you know, and that's not healthy either. That's not mature. It's something I'm working on. But
I am too. Yeah,
it's just, I am too. Yeah. Oh, it's so hard. Anyway, Rose, it has been so lovely chatting with you today. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we kind of go?
I do want to say one last thing about the ego. And the word, it's been very empowering to alchemize the word and the meaning of it, because I know we, some of us switch it to heart, but I still like coming to terms with our egos, and
I like that.
It's okay. It's okay to have ego wants. Like, we are humans. We get to have those things. It is very powerful. And that's been part of my journey, because there's a lot of language about killing our ego, but we came here to experience a human life. And it's okay.
Spoken like someone who's almost quad right. Like, that's so true. And I'm glad you said that, because I know my own tendency is to, I tend to simplify all the language anyway, but you're absolutely right. I think the baggage the word ego carries with it, through no fault of its own. I tend to go, heart center, because it's easier, but also it doesn't like carry that provocation. I think actually the guy that channeled this probably called it the ego center on purpose. He actually had his incarnation cross in the ego. It was gate 51, the gate of shock. And so I know a lot of times the terminology he chose was, or channeled, or, you know, one can argue, was intentionally provocative. And I'm such like a mama bear. My tendency is like, let's make it soft. Let's make it comfortable. Let's make it cuddly. But you're absolutely right. I think like, if we really are going to kind of confront our collective shadow, you know, again, around people pleasing, around having wants and desires and values, and having that be not just perfectly okay, but healthy and an integral part of the human experience, you are absolutely right. We need to start embracing and alchemizing and almost like taking back the word ego and giving it back.
Taking back the word. Yes.
We're going to reclaim it. We're reclaiming ego.
Yes.
Boom. I love that. We're going to turn it into a positive thing. I love that. Also, spoken like a true ego manifested authority. I love that.
That's it for this week. Thank you so much to Rose for sitting in communion with me. Such a pleasure to meet you. And thank you to you, the Interior Creature community, just for your patience and your compassion this past week. So last week, as I was editing this very episode, I ended up running into some issues with my laptop. And it turns out, no surprise, that it's very hard to run a digital online business without a working laptop. So anyway, we should be back to our regularly weekly schedule as of now, as long as I keep in the good graces of the technology gods. Anyway, if you would like to connect, I would love to tell you all about you and what your chart says about your journey this lifetime. So head on over to interiorcreature.com, where you can find information about birth chart readings via the book a reading link on the menu bar. And if you want to go deeper and really peel back the layers of your relationship to all of your placements in your chart and do some deep and supportive deconditioning work around those energies, you are cordially invited to join me in the Karmic Studies Elevator community. And you can learn about that by clicking on the Karmic Studies Elevator link on that same menu bar. Until next time, I hope you are enjoying this initial taste of Pluto in Aquarius. Talk soon.